can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Mark Nepo, and I wanted to ask you about the idea when we've all done those exercises. What do you want your eulogy to say or your obituary to say? And so we write up all these things, and they're about our accomplishments. But you do a different take on this, and I was really impressed with this. You said that if you're walking with a friend, you might ask, and you say to your friend, if when you die and someone asks me and wants to know what you were like, what would you have me say? Now, that's a very different thing than a eulogy. Like, it made me think, wow, if I wanted to share with someone what I'd like them to say, what I'm like, is very different than doing a eulogy.
Yeah, and that actually comes from a story from these two Chinese sages in the 800s. And the older was Yun Yan. And it's in this chapter called Just This Person, and you'll understand why when I share the story. So, and the younger was Tung Shan, and we know this from the letters and diaries of Tung Shan. Tung Shan was a student of Yun Yan and became a teacher in his own right, and they remained friends. And so they used to walk pretty regularly along a stream in silence. And as Yun Yan got older, Tung Shan said to him, "When you die, what do you want?" And they walked a little further in silence, and Yun Yan, the older, looked at his student-turned-friend and said, "Say, just this person." And he could see that Tung Shan was a little perplexed. So they walked a little further in silence, and Yun Yan didn't explain himself. He just put his hand on his friend's shoulder and said, "You are carrying a very great matter. Be careful." And they never talked about it again. And when Yun Yan died, Tung Shan, in his grief, walked along that stream and went into the stream. And in his grief, he saw his friend's face and he saw his own face and he finally saw all of humanity. And Tung Shan himself concluded after that, "If you want to know the truth, you must never stray very far from yourself." And so this is almost a spiritual riddle. You know, what did the master mean when he said, "Say, just this person"? Well, of course, I don't know. I didn't meet him or talk to him. But what it says to me, and why I so love this story, is he didn't say, "Oh, shucks, don't worry. He wasn't being falsely humble." And he didn't say, "I was a great teacher." He said, "Say, just this person, that we are here to be just who we are born to be, no more, no less, to be this particular person, this spirit in this body, in this time." And that being that authentic in our path, that's the great matter. That's the great, you know, there's another story in the Talmud where there's a very good man who's been given away so much, he's cared for so many, and he's on his deathbed, Akiba. And he bemoans to his rabbi as he's close to death, "I fear God will judge me for not being more like Moses." And his rabbi takes his hand, he says, "Oh, Akiba, God will not judge you for not being like Moses. God will only judge Akiba for not being Akiba."
So that goes back to our authenticity, and that's when we're most vibrant and alive and in our own aliveness in some way, and that's where we can really be that spiritual friend to another. And
leads to another thing that I talk about in the book, about how when we truly love, we enlarge our sense, is a paradox, we enlarge our sense of self by giving of ourself. If I truly give to you, I grow for it. Now, that's not to say that I can also be exhausted and I have no more resources and I have to say, you know, I can't do it today. So both things are true. But when we truly give of ourselves, we are rewarded that giving enlarges our sense of self. And this is one of the mysteries of friendship, of true friendship.
Well, now that reminds me of another story of yours, a personal story. All right. This is a story of Cindy. She was coming every day
yes.
and helping you out and caregiving, but she was very awkward in wanting to be of help.
Yeah.
Why I bring this up is many of us feel that awkwardness. We want to be of help and we don't know how. But the reverse is true too, Mark. You are on the receiving end. You are right. You're doing, I think, chemo at that time and really having
yes.
some health challenges and energy challenges. And it was hard for you to receive.
Yeah.
You were awkward in your receiving.
Never forget that moment. So I was going through my cancer journey and was very, you know, disoriented and afraid and hurting. And she was one of a wonderful group of friends. She would come every day and almost, and we'd talk. And then she would always say, "Gee, what do you need? What do you need? I want to do something for you." And I couldn't figure out what I needed. And, you know, and so this would go on day after day. And then one time she finally said, "Yo, well, what do you need? What can I bring you?" And I welled up and I said, "I don't want to die." And she welled up and she said, "I don't want you to die." And we both cried and held each other. And then after I had expressed that in my tears, then I was able to say, "Orange juice, I need orange juice." And she said, "Orange juice, I'll get you orange juice." And it really didn't matter about the orange juice, but until that place of high safety was entered by both of us, it wasn't even possible to see what was needed. And it really didn't matter whether it was orange juice or not. It just gave us a way to lean into being truthfully together by admitting and her receiving what was under all of that. Because what I really needed, she couldn't give me.
Yes.
But we could be there together.
But there's just that moment of giving and receiving. What we can give and receive is the truth in that moment.
Yes.
It was truth, like you don't want to die and she doesn't want you to die. And just to say that truthfully to each other kind of breaks open the whole.
Absolutely. And then there is that's a good example of true compassion, is just being with. We can't solve things, but we can be with each other truly on the journey.
Exactly, exactly. Well, switching subjects here, I'm going to ask you about dogs and what the friendship, what you learn about friendship from dogs. And you weren't always a friend with dogs.
No. So I when I was young, like a year old, even, I was bitten by a Dalmatian. I don't have a conscious memory, but I had a phobia of dogs for the longest time. You know, it was until on the other side of my cancer journey that I wondered if I was still afraid. And I kind of walked by some loose dogs on vacation, and I kind of was okay. So my loved ones bought me a golden retriever puppy. That was my first dog. And I learned so much from that wonderful creature. We now have Zuzu. So what I learned so much from, you know, they taught me, and it was so interesting because Zuzu was a rescue, and she was found on the streets of Kentucky. We don't know what that first year was like, but she has a fear reaction to other dogs. She is just, so here, karmically, I am given a dog that I have to teach not to be afraid of other dogs.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right? And And you know, there's a wonderful Native American story in the Lenape tribe in Delaware. Has this story where a boy finds this dog, and they become such great pals. And then the boy gets sick, and the medicine men, no one can really figure out what's wrong with him. And the dog, when no one's watching, turns the boy into a dog and takes him into the woods, and they just run and play and live for a time in the woods. And then the dog, Witissa, brings the boy back and turns him back into a boy, and he's healed. And Witissa says, "You have been so good to me, I will be your friend for life." And I feel like this is what these wonderful little furry angels do for us, is they make us, for the moment, become a dog with them, and then we come back and we're a better human being.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I'm also thinking about another quote that you have that I just loved. And this was, it was from Edora Welty. And she talks about friendship is like a magnet, and it draws its own circle. I love that. I feel that that's really true, that friendship.
Yeah.
And that's what we call that island of safety, would you say?
Yes. And she also says, I quote also from her elsewhere, where she says, "Friendship is such a blessing, and we know it didn't have to happen. It didn't have to happen." And, you know, it's this miracle that through that magnet and through being authentic, we find our kindred spirits. And, you know, I do believe that strangers are just friends in disguise.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wrote a poem, one of the love poems for Susan. And of course, we're significant others, but we're the oldest of friends. And I remember writing a poem about how, you know, this amazing mystery, you know, we were like two cut flowers drifting near each other at sea. How did this happen?
How did this happen? That also reminds me of a poem that you also include in your book by Rumi, translated by Coleman Barks and Moen.
Yeah, and it's just this fantastic poem about friendship. Rumi says, "A wall standing alone is useless, but put three or four together and they'll support a roof and keep the grain dry and safe. Rushes and reeds must be woven to be useful as a mat. If they weren't interlaced, the wind would blow them away. Like that, God paired up creatures and gave them friendship."
That's beautiful. Just beautiful. Thank you so much. I'm speaking with Mark Nepo, and he is the author of You Don't Have to Do It Alone, The Power of Friendship. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, marknepo.com. And he spells his last name N-E-P-O, marknepo.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Mark Nepo, and we are exploring friendship. There was a poem that you included in your book, On a Way to a Poetry Festival. You're on the thruway, and describe
what was happening.
Yeah, we're on
the thruway, and we're heading, toward the toll booth. And so suddenly, because we had been talking about friendship, all of a sudden, the instructions and going through the toll became very metaphoric and about friendship. And so this is called Changing Lanes. After all these years, we meet again to compare notes. We stock the car with poems and water and stories needing light. As we come to the thruway, one lane says wide loads. The next is marked nothing in tow, and the third calls out easy pass. Suddenly, it is a serious choice. We slow to think it through. We've been bumped around enough to know there is no easy pass. And it has taken years to get rid of all we carry. So we look at each other, bright eyes and aging bodies, and Hank blurts out, yeah, baby, nothing in tow.
Nothing in tow. I love that. I love that. Just the metaphors that just come to us as we're flying down the freeway, you know. Yeah, absolutely. And another metaphor that you use about friendship has to do with the metaphor of the bamboo.
Bamboo is this incredible, durable, flexible, fast-growing tree that is hollow. It's hollow. And it's just such a great metaphor for friendship, that we have to be, as we were talking earlier, we have to be firm by being authentic so that we're hollow enough to receive each other. And there's this mysterious thing that a whole grove of bamboo, which will bend in the wind, you know, before breaking, they could be asleep for 60 years. And when one starts to grow, the entire grove grows at once. And that is the most powerful and touching metaphor, that we grow together. We grow together. If we are true and show up for each other, we don't even have to work at it. When one grows, the other grows. We wake up at the same time and grow.
Well, that takes us to going back to, we're talking about dogs. Well, this time it's cats, that he was living in Istanbul. And
yes.
And he.
And so this was a man who had been living a highly, you know, pressurized Western kind of corporate life, just pushing himself. And he was very successful outwardly, but then was just bereft inwardly, just lost. And he walked away from everything out of desperation and wound up traveling. And he was in Istanbul, not finding any relief, when he was suddenly surrounded by several stray cats, and he started feeding them fish. And then he came back the next day and the next day, and doing this simple giving of feeding these stray cats healed him. He said, I don't know how to explain it, but I just, as soon as I started feeding these stray cats, I felt relieved.
It's so beautiful that as just the act of giving and taking something outside of ourselves, nourishing another, even if it's a cat, it just transforms our relationship to the world, and now it helps us to re-enter the world once more.
This also affirms that as amazing as our minds are, they can only take us so far. Mm. And in fact, I learned this quite by accident, that you know, troubled by something that I couldn't figure out, and suddenly a friend called me up in need. So I, of course, dropped everything and went to help them. And when I came back, things were more clear. Then the act of giving, when you can think no more, give. Give.
And that was a small gesture on your friend's part. And we never know. We never know what those small gestures. I think there was another story that you tell on about E.M. Forster, who had a lover or fell in love with an Egyptian man. Do you recall that?
Oh my God, absolutely. I'll never forget that. Right. So E.M. Forster, who was openly gay and was a conscientious objector in World War One, and was then asked to serve as part of a group of British servicemen who looked for missing soldiers in Egypt. He was stationed, and he fell in love there with Mohammed Del Adel, who was a tram driver, a younger tram driver, and they just fell in love. They were like the love of each other's life, and through that, finally, he had to go back to England, and they kept up a correspondence, but his Egyptian lover married, and finally, his Egyptian lover died of tuberculosis, and his wife, whose name it was impossible to find, just impossible, but his wife sent Forster her husband's wedding ring, sent it to him. And that moment, I can almost, these are the moment, this the moment, the quiet moments that hold the world together. I can almost hear the ring drop in an envelope as she sealed it to mail it to London. And what, in her grief, what allowed her to not only love her husband, but to love her husband's lover, to send him her husband's wedding ring. And that's what I want to try to understand. That is at the heart of friendship in so many directions.
Exactly. When I read that story like you, I really could see her putting that ring in the envelope and just imagining what he, Forster, just felt receiving that. And knowing, see, this man was her husband, and they really never saw each other again.
No.
But she understood their connection, and she didn't take it as making her a relationship with her husband less than at all. I think for her to have that courage to send that ring, that was such a loving thing to do. With that said, at the end of your new book, You Don't Have to Do It Alone, you wrote a poem, and it just blew my socks off. I just love this poem, and I would love to ask you to share it with us today and how it came to you.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, as we talk about this and we think about friendship, and then we think about that strangers are friends in disguise, and that when we open our hearts in that way, we you know, by loving one person deeply and truly, we learn how to love the world. And so this, in that spirit, this poem is, which I end the book with, is called Spiritual Physics. The prophet Zarathustra, whose name means undiluted star, he said that gravity is the irrefutable force of love that binds us together. And the Chinese sage Mencius said that our impulse to drop everything to save a child from falling into a well, this holds everything together. And the rabbis of Eastern Europe rang their bells at dawn like spiritual roosters, barking that God is dormant until you are in relationship. They would chant, "Get up and make God visible." Isn't this how we complete each other? When I walk our dog, I wave to the mailman driving from house to house, though I don't know his name. At the register in the supermarket, I have the same small exchange with Betty about her arthritis every time I buy milk and bread. And when I board the plane, I have the same brief intimacy with Darren, the gate agent. He has two grown kids, one who won't speak to him. And there was the old man wanting to buy two peaches, but they were only sold by the bunch, so he left. And I watched the woman behind me run to the produce aisle and then to the parking lot to say, "Here, have them all." These small exchanges make God visible. They hold everything together. They arc us one to the other until the gravity of love binds us. So for God's sake, say hello.
Mark, thank you for saying hello to us today. Oh, thank you so much. I've been speaking with Mark Nepo, author of You Don't Have to Do It Alone, The Power of Friendship. His website is marknepo.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3815.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Benjamin Mertz, founder and director of the Joyful Noise Gospel Singers. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the sacredness and power of lifting our voices together in song.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.